Thursday. Lot to get to and lot to talk about this Thursday. It's me, Anna DeVlantis, live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. Hope you're having a good Thursday. Thanks for listening to WGN. Now, yesterday at this time, James, you weren't here, but Lauren, you were. We were talking about whether it was cheating if you give up meat for Lent and then you turn to the Impossible Burgers, the soy burgers, the plant-based stuff.
Right, because it's not meat.
Right, because it's not meat. And so my immediate reaction was, of course that's okay.
Right.
Steve Bertrand said, of course that's okay. And you said, yes, that's fine. And then the Archdiocese of Chicago said, no, that's completely not okay. And they cleared it all up for us, said that that is not in the spirit of Lent. So those are, they just said the meat substitutes, if you're giving up meat, just refrain from all of it because that's part of the sacrifice and giving up stuff. All right.
I think it would be like kind of subject to your own interpretation. No offense.
Yeah, I wonder. But like fast forward to today. If you're thinking about still giving something up, it's not too late because now the Pope has spoken out about what we all should be giving up for Lent. You hear this one? Online trolling.
Yes.
Pope Francis
please.
Says, stop it. Just stop it. All of the angry, the nasty things that people say to each other, being rude to each other, all that stuff. Just stop at least for 40 days.
See, what did I say yesterday? I think God doesn't care what goes in your mouth. It's what comes out.
You made that statement and it just took us all back. We thought, wow, that's something to digest.
Yeah, as a small child, I came up with that philosophy somehow.
How about that? James, are you going to refrain from online trolling for 40 days? Is that part of your plan?
I will. It'll be hard, but I will do it.
Yeah, I kind of wasn't wondering about you.
The nicest guy in the newsroom.
Exactly. That's why I asked. And that's the whole point of it, that I feel like the online trollers, the true people who do that, I don't know. I'm very hopeful, but I don't know that they're going to be listening to the Pope. He's just saying that this was his point here. He says, today, people insult each other as if they were saying good day. And that we should consider giving up useless words, gossip, rumors, and tittle-tattle. I like that. Give up the tittle-tattle. So that's where the Pope is on the whole thing. And I hope people listen. I do. I just feel, we talk about this all the time. I feel like when you're on your computer, you're on your device, or if you have a fake profile, if you're one of those with two followers and a fake picture, that it's so easy just to just go after people. And it's like, let's refrain from that. Social media is not a very friendly place these days. And then there's this, speaking of social media, Facebook says it is banning misleading ads about the coronavirus. Finally, I think Facebook's doing the right thing here.
Yeah, they'll be fine with that, but, politics, no, won't touch that.
They're not touching that. And I think that's a trickier thing to do, to be fair. It's hard to sort of vet those commercials to see what's what and who's saying what. I mean, some things are obviously false, like when the Pope endorsed a presidential candidate. I think it was Trump. Obviously, we knew that wasn't true, but there are other things that are just, it's harder to do. But with this, here's what Facebook is saying they want to do. Listen to what you think. What do you think of this? They want to ban advertisements for products offering any cures or prevention for the coronavirus and those that create a sense of urgency about the situation. For example, here's one. Ads with claims like face masks are 100% guaranteed to prevent the spread of the virus. Not allowed.
Well, yeah, that's definitely not true.
Right. So I think Facebook is saying they're going to be looking for those types of statements, looking for those types of products, those kinds of scare kind of tactics or videos or memes or whatever they are, and flag them and take them down. And
I guess, mean, any company, couldn't they really be sued for false advertisement if they say 100%?
You would think, but you do see that stuff on social media all the time, don't you? And it doesn't seem that it ever goes anywhere. So Facebook's cracking down. If you see anything, report it. Now, I don't know if you watched the news conference with the president and federal health officials yesterday, or you heard it right here on WGN Radio. We carried it live. But when the health officials speak about the coronavirus, they do not say coronavirus. They say what you just said, James Sears, COVID-19, the official scientific word for it. That's what they decided to call it a couple weeks ago, this particular strain of the coronavirus. And, it's interesting you chose to say that. I wonder if most people in media are changing that today as a result of that, because up until now, I really haven't heard much of COVID-19 from people who report on it. That kind of thing.
Yeah, sounds sexier, right?
Yeah, COVID-19, I guess. I don't know. I wonder if it's going to be like the Willis Tower. Like, it's, we know it's the official name is Willis Tower, but are we going to use it? I don't know. I just, fascinating to hear you say that at the top of the hour. I thought, oh, he's using it now too.
I like how Stephen Colbert acknowledged the new name, saying, because, COVID 1 through 18 were taken.
Maybe they are. This is I'm leaving this up to scientists, and they have a lot to say, including this. There's a top infectious disease doctor at the Mayo Clinic, and he's saying we're all washing our hands wrong. We're doing it wrong. Do you do the happy birthday song? That's okay. 20 to 30 seconds is about how long you're supposed to do it. But do you do this? Now, when you hold your hands like a web, kind of your fingers spread out, and then rub your hands together, you're supposed to get the fingers to really rub against each other inside. And so they clean that area as well. They say a lot of the grime and bacteria is right in there. And most people forget to do that. They just kind of clasp their hands together and get going. And then the other thing he said is make sure you dry your hands. Dry them. Because wet hands, even partially wet, that they can still hang on to the bacteria. So it was a little, yeah, I actually played the video, the YouTube video this morning. Me and my 8-year-old sat there and we watched it. We're like, all right, this is how you do it. This is another big question. Another big question many are asking, can Lysol and Clorox products kill the novel coronavirus? And the answer is kind of complicated because I think a lot of people had noticed that on the back of the Lysol and Clorox, like when you buy the products, the wipes or any of that kind of stuff, it'll say on there, coronavirus is included in the viruses that it helps to kill. And so the science is saying that, yes, disinfectant products that have been proven effective in protecting against the other human coronaviruses are thought to be effective against this one. That's the opinion from top docs, again, in the health community. But they say, you know, this is a different strain. And so they're hoping that's true. So stuff to think about. Something else we want to think about is the red light camera situation, because maybe you saw the headlines. I know John Williams was talking about it earlier with you, and the red light cameras are kind of, they're being banned in many places across our state. They're not popular. We know that. The representative who came up with this whole bill and is trying to push it through and thinks it doesn't even go far enough, he'd like to see a statewide ban of red light cameras. He's going to join us, Representative David McSweeney, coming up here on WGN. We've been talking about health officials responding to a lot of questions people have, including washing their hands and can Lysol and Clorox products kill the novel coronavirus. They're saying that even though it says it on the back, it might be very much effective cleaning your surfaces and wiping down computers and keyboards and phones or whatever it is you think you want to wipe clean. I think the issue is they say that this is a new strain, and so they're hoping it'll be effective at cleaning those surfaces. But the problem is, I should have added, that the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, as the scientific community refers to it, thought to spread primarily by people and their respiratory droplets, so like coughs and sneezes and that kind of stuff. And if it goes person to person and you just catch that, it's not going to matter if it hits the surface or not. So that's part of the clearing up that whole thing. But let's clear up something else, because there is a movement against red light cameras, and something big passed in the State House, and we want to talk about that, because the bill is sponsored by and being pushed by Representative David McSweeney. He is not big on the red light cameras. I think that's fair to say. Representative, you've been trying to ban them actually statewide, but this is you consider this a win?
I do consider it a win, but this is a corrupt program. Insiders benefit, and it's the most regressive tax around. It's not a fine. It's a tax on low-income citizens who obviously can't pay the $100 and are forced then to pay big fines. This is everything that's wrong with the state of Illinois. John Lausch, U.S. attorney, is doing an outstanding job fighting corruption, and also has exposed a lot of what's going on now with these red light cameras. So my bill would ban red light cameras for non-home rule units of government, generally with populations of less than 25,000. So 45% of the meters.
Representative, sure. Explain that, because you hear home rule communities, and I don't think that's a standard term that most of us hear. So this bill that has passed the House and is moving through legislature would ban red light cameras entirely. If you're in one of these small communities, home rule, so-called home rule, you couldn't
For non-home rule. So under the Illinois Constitution, home rule units of government have more flexibility and power. They're generally have a population of over 25,000. So the city of Chicago obviously is the best example of that. My bill would ban red light cameras for these non-home rule units of government. So that's 45% of the cameras in the state of with municipalities, 45% of the municipalities that have cameras.
Representative, I think that shocks a lot of people, because I would think, since non-home rule is what you're talking about here, that it would, most of the large cities like Chicago would be excluded, and so many big suburbs and big, you know, cities or even mid-sized cities across the state, that those would be not included in this. So 45% of the cameras, how is that possible?
Well, that's 45%. Let me be clear, 45% of the municipalities. So 101 municipalities have red light cameras. This would eliminate it in municipalities, correct. So specifically, this would eliminate it in 44. It's a lower percentage of the cameras because Chicago has such a high percentage. But let me back up a little and talk about the background on this. If I passed the same bill in 2015, it's the only substantial red light ban bill that ever came to the floor, that's my understanding, and it was killed in the Senate, and it turns out it was actually killed by Senator Sandoval, and that's one of the reasons that he's going to jail. This is an existential threat to the corrupt red light camera companies. There have been multiple indictments. I favor a bill that would ban all red light cameras. This is a start, and in fact, what I have done, in fact, today after I passed my bill, I have requested to get out of Rules Committee my House Bill 323 that would actually ban all red light cameras. So it's early in the session. I wanted to get this bill done, and my goodness, was there opposition. The room full of lobbyists were lined up against this bill, and this is definitely a good first step. But I also make it clear, we have a lot of time, and I have now officially requested, now that I've passed this bill, House Bill 323, that would ban all red light cameras to be out of Rules Committee, to go to the committee. And I will try to get that passed. There are bills in the Senate to do it. This is a corrupt program. This is a program that has to end. And frankly, the lobbyists are incredible. Jim Durkin, the Republican leader, his best friend, Tom Walsh, is a lobbyist for SafeSpeak. He just gave Durkin a $1,000 check that was reported today. Durkin has accepted $7,500 from SafeSpeak. Yeah. And, of course, Walsh is a lobbyist. So I'm fighting the establishment of both parties here. And, frankly, I'm very proud that I was able to get something done, but I'm trying to get more done. It's early in session.
Representative, so we have all heard about the Chicago area politicians, the Cook County area politicians, politicians across the state who have now been entangled in bribery schemes over these red light cameras. Are you saying that that's the biggest flaw or the only flaw with this program? Because if you can, I suppose if you can eliminate the bribery piece of this, then are they okay then? Or you just don't like the program?
Actually not. No, I think this is a scam. In fact, I ran on this when I was elected in 2012 for the first time, and have tried to ban them ever since. The bribery and the corruption is just part of it, and obviously that's been going on for a long time. This is all about additional revenue, not about safety. The Chicago Tribune in 2014 commissioned a study with the Texas A&M professor leading the study. It shows it actually increases rear-end collisions by 22%, and then you combine that with our short yellow lights in the state of Illinois at 3 seconds. The shortest in the country, and this is just a scam to collect more money. So put the bribery and the corruption and the lobbyist friends like Jim Durkin has, put that all aside. This is a bad program. This is about revenue. This is not about safety.
Well, I think that that's what I think a lot of drivers feel, that initially this was billed as a big safety thing. We're going to make our streets safer. We're going to prevent collisions. We're going to save lives. And I remember right when it came out in Chicago, the Tribune had done an in-depth investigation and looked at the data, I don't know, 6 months, a year later. And they basically said the majority of the tickets were going out to people committing rolling red light right turns. So they kind of stopped, but they didn't stop. And so they sort of, you know, kind of slowed down, looked both ways, whatever, and then turned right. That those were the people getting the majority of the tickets back then. Since then, we've seen other flaws, and we've seen, of course, the bribery scandals and that kind of thing. So, yeah, the safety argument kind of it fell apart, although I guess there is some data that shows there are certain types of crashes that have been reduced because of them. Maybe it's sort of a wash when you look at the ones created by the program. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I believe actually this best study shows a 22% increase in rear end collisions. It showed a 15% reduction in right turn collisions. But I believe that the police do a great job all throughout the state. I'm one of the biggest supporters of the police around. In communities that actually do not have red light cameras, they do a great job enforcing the law. So I want to be clear, if anybody commits a violation and gets a ticket from the police, not a camera, then I'm 100% supportive of the police. But this is a situation, this is a scam. This is a get-rich scam by these companies that then pay lobbyists like Tom Walsh, who then lobby Jim Durkin, who then votes against that president, you know, by voting president. So this is a corrupt program. We have people going to jail, but it's also a program that's about revenue, taking more of your money, not about safety.
Representative McSweeney, I understand the argument you're making about the lobbyists, because I think that there have been obvious links to them and problems that are linked to these bribery schemes and that kind of thing. So I understand that whole argument. But the other piece of this, and we're hearing from some of our listeners too, is you have these smaller communities who say they rely on this kind of revenue. And why not go ahead and get some of it from people who are breaking the law? Is that part of it not okay? You saw the justice mayor come out very strongly to say, I'm going to do everything I can to keep him there. But I guess his community is impacted by this bill if it passes. And so those types of mayors, those types of people who are in smaller communities, what do you say to them?
Cut spending. That's what they need to do. We have the tax burden. I've been a big fighter for cutting property taxes, cutting taxes. And for the mayor of Justice, he can run, but he can't hide from this corrupt system. And again, it's really interesting, right? They said it's about safety, but then he's arguing about revenue. This is just about revenue. This is a ripoff program. Again, lobbyists from Save the Speed, like Tom Walsh, who are best friends with Jim Durkin, are actually part of the system, part of the problem. Hope the FBI is looking at that whole issue.
We have a texter here says, a listener says, hi, Anna, the short yellow lights are dangerous for pedestrians, especially for seniors who cannot walk real fast. I walk fast and they are too short for me. I hadn't even thought of that particular angle. Thank you for that.
And that was what I was just saying before at the beginning. It's a combination. We have 3-second yellow lights. Most of the country has 4-second yellow lights. So it's a ripoff. It's actually meant to catch people by the short yellow lights. It's just a scam. It's a get-rich scam by political insiders who pay lobbyists and then go lobby people like Jim Durkin, the Republican leader, who votes against the bill. That's what this is all about, is money. This has nothing to do with safety, and that's why the short yellow lights are there. They're dangerous. That's why this is a get-rich scheme so the lobbyists that contribute to politicians like Jim Durkin.
Representative, just finally here, we only have a minute here, but tell us what's the next step here, what's going to happen, and how do you think this will end up? Is it going to pass?
Well, first of all, Emil Jones will have the bill in the Senate. They'll be sent to him over the next couple of weeks. I put a procedural motion to hold it until next week to be sent so that nobody could steal the bill from me. I also have asked officially today, and that was my word to everybody, is I would do that after I pass the first bill, to have my bill released to eliminate all red light cameras. So it's early in session. I'm hoping that we get a vote on that bill, House Bill 323. Please, anybody who is listening, I beg you to call your legislator and your state senator, especially to urge a yes vote for banning red light cameras, banning all of them. My House Bill 323, or the bill I passed yesterday, House Bill 322, that's a first start. But for the love of God, let's stop the corruption. Let's stop guys like Tom Walsh at Safe Speed from contributing money to Jim Durkin on the day after a vote.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. You're hearing from all sorts of people. Would you say your constituents in general are with you on this whole thing? Because we are getting a number of listeners tell us about, hey, if you break the law, you should get a ticket, and that's okay with a lot of people too.
And I'm okay with that too, but not red light cameras. Let the police do their work. I have fully support our police and communities that do not have red light cameras. The police do a great job. If somebody is breaking the law, let the police do their work, because I trust them completely.
Yeah. Have you also heard from people who actually take these to court and have issues there? Because we've heard from listeners, too, on that piece of things, that they're not always handled the way they expect them to be handled.
Well, that's the problem, is that this is meant to really hurt working women, minority working women, because they get a fine and then they're forced to take off work to fight these. It's a trap. This is government going after low-income minorities to try to collect money. I think it's a racist program because of that. I think it's a regressive tax. And per your point, people can't afford to take off work. They spend a whole day in court challenging this corrupt system. I think this is a racist program. It's a regressive tax. It's meant to hit low-income people to make people rich and make lobbyists rich so they give money to Jim Durkin.
All right. Some political stuff in there, too, but I appreciate you weighing in on the overall issue of the red light cameras. And if people would like to reach you, Representative David McSweeney, you're based there in Barrington Hills, right?
And my office is in Philly, and contact me anytime.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you calling into WGN Radio, and keep us posted on what happens with the red light.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it. All right. So you heard from the representative that, again, a little bit of a political messaging in his message about red light cameras. But nonetheless, we learn what he's trying to do. He ultimately would like to ban the red light cameras across the entire state of Illinois. You heard. He said police can do it. Police can crack down. They should be able to do that. If somebody runs a red light or speeds through, then that's okay. But they don't belong around, and it's a corrupt program. So many flaws, so many problems with it. We'll see what happens there. Weigh in with your representatives if you have strong feelings about this, because they're making moves in Springfield on that issue. And he says he's going even further. As I said, this would be just some of those smaller communities, but eventually the plan is to move it statewide. All right, it's 1:33. Wow. Red light cameras, that touches a nerve for drivers, all of us. Most people feel very strongly about the red light cameras. Sergeant Pete Kokonis is here. We've got a number of things to talk about with violent crime and other issues within the police department. 38 years as a Chicago police officer, but you also happened, and I'm glad you're here for this reason too, in addition to the other stuff, but you also worked in the traffic area. So your feeling about the red light camera, will you weigh in on that for me?
In the 80s, going to Northwestern's Traffic Institute, we did a grant request from the Illinois Department of Transportation to study accidents and what's the primary cause. And we sent policemen to certain areas, and their main focus was just to watch traffic at those certain locations.
Where they had crashes
where
or
they
accidents?
Had crashes, yeah. You know, like Six Corners and, you know, 95th and Western. So we sent policemen at the most prevalent accident locations. And we found that it was following too close, lane changes, and shooting out and making the left turn. Mm-hmm. Going, you know, rolling up and doing a Hollywood stop, as we referred to, and then taking a right turn. It's not worth a $100 ticket. I mean, that's just highway robbery. And it does affect the minority community more than any others, because they put them, you know, in certain locations and certain communities. They live off the money that the police department, the revenue, brings in.
Yeah. This is an interesting text from a listener. Thank you for this. 3 million miles of driving, must be professional. My only significant accident was at a red light camera intersection in Matteson, Illinois, where a motorist sped up to beat the light and T-boned my Chrysler, injuring my wife on the passenger side. Gee, think about that. Ironically, the red light camera also documented the fact that the offending motorist had accelerated and passed another car in attempt to beat the red light. You do hear about that kind of a situation where people, they know these are expensive tickets, you don't want to get one, and so you drive accordingly in that intersection, which produces dangerous driving.
The other thing is that people sometimes, you'll notice when it's posted that there's a camera there, as soon as that light turns orange, these people hook those brakes in, and the poor Shamil behind them has no chance and just rams them.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. This is why they're unpopular. Now, the smaller towns are saying, hey, don't get rid of our revenue, so they're pushing back on this whole thing, and I'm not a fan of them. I really aren't, and I'm so sick of reading the headlines, too, about all the problems with them and the bribery scandals connected to them, and there's so many of them, right? We saw the Sandoval situation. He pled guilty. There's so many of these kinds of things linked to the red light camera because they're so profitable.
Some communities used to also be noted as speed traps. When you used to, in the old days, you get the AAA Motor Club maps to go somewhere, and it would have in red, speed trap, do not speed through Tuscaloosa, you know,
they have
whatever.
It on Waze now.
Yeah.
You can, it'll tell you if there's an officer ahead
or
something like that. So, yeah, people do what they need to do.
Radar detectors never worked.
They didn't. They don't.
No, because when I worked radar, I might have my radar off and I'm looking in my rearview mirror and I see a car come flying up. I turn the radar on. It hits the car before your radar detector tells you, and I've already got you. So radar detectors never were good.
Didn't know that. Wish I knew
the
that when I was
18. The best thing was, you know, a breaker, you know, the guy would say, there's a smoky up here at such and such, you know. That was the only way
that it would work. Okay, we have also another listener say, I have three of these tickets, and all three of them were for those right turns. That's what we've been talking about.
I
when
got
you
one
sort of
here
roll. You got
on
one
Ontario.
When you're
leaving
coming
here.
Oh, sorry. See if you can expense that. Good luck.
Yeah, right.
Good
I luck. Can expense it. Yeah.
Good luck with that. They're going to say it's on you. I think that's what's going to happen. But it happens to all of us. I mean, it does. And, you know, that's they're big revenue generators. So they've got quite a fight in Springfield to get rid of all of them across the state. But some of it's moving forward. Let's move forward ourselves here, because you're here to talk about other things going on in crime. An increase in carjackings here in Chicago, 75% increase year to year. That is serious. It's not the highest, because I guess in the early 2000s there were shockingly high numbers of carjackings, but now they saw that 75% uptick year to year. What do you think we're seeing here, Pee? We just seems like every day in the news now, the last couple of months, you hear one in every neighborhood.
Right. You're seeing kids all over. Forget the city, even the suburbs. You have Sauganish, which is part of the city, but you have them in Wilmette. They three or four kids will pile in a car and they'll go around, they'll look for an easy car, and they'll see somebody getting in or getting out or the car warming up, and it's gone. It's just gone. And they recently caught some kids. They stole a Fusion, Ford Fusion, and what they did is they found another Ford Fusion. They were switching license plates, and they pulled the gun on the guy that caught him switching the license plates. So these kids are getting smarter and smarter as they steal these cars, and they use them in other crimes.
That's what you've outlined this before. That seems to be what happens here. They carjack somebody, take your car, then
they take a truck, they drive it through the front store window, whatever, you know. It's they don't have a car to use, so they'll use yours,
you know. And it's, you know, because of the high publicity around the ones that have happened in the like sort of the north side over here.
Well,
we saw
in 1 week here.
We saw it on Oak Street, I think. We've seen them in Gold Coast.
And Michigan Avenue.
Michigan Avenue, and one of them was right in the middle of the day. Those get a lot of attention, but I'm looking at a grid of where the carjackings have been across Chicago. And honestly, there isn't a neighborhood untouched. You've got north side, south side. You've got a cluster in downtown and west of the loop. But then you see a number on the south side and the northwest side, too, another cluster. It seems to be happening anywhere.
Hey, if you're going to steal a car, steal a nice one. You know,
we do not condone any of that here on WGN Radio. Thank you very much. But I know what you're saying. It's like you know, it's hard to. It's just hard to get your arms around this.
If you want, you could spend $50, get a kill switch on your car where you just turn it off, and then the guy takes the car and he drives a block, and then the gas stops, and then he has to get out. But, you know, it's an expense that you have to put on it. You get low, Jack. You get, you know, these kids are smart nowadays.
Speaking of that, we do want to get to this issue of bail reform, because it's front and center in the Cook County State's Attorney's race. A lot of people talk about it in relation to Kim Fox, and whether you agree with it or you don't. Her office and the chief judge of Cook County, Timothy Evans, have also implemented a new policy over the last couple years, right? We're bond reform. They've decided that if you're not considered to be a threat, and we want to go into things about that, because I know you take issue with that as a former police officer, and you know a number of police officers who do, that you can go out with no bond at all or very little bond, and you're back on the street. So the chief judge's office, Judge Evans, had put out data that showed there was no increase in violent crime after they implemented this bond reform. Then the Tribune, and we had the David Jackson, one of the people who crunched the data.
Right.
It was months of crunching and months of FOIA requests and going through it and getting everything, trying to get everything. I don't think the chief judge's office was particularly helpful with that. But they managed to get data together here. And they found that it wasn't quite right what they were reporting. They said that they were allowing more violent crimes to occur from people who were prior offenders who were let out on these bonds. And that the definition of violent crime even changed by Judge Evans when they put together the list, that the domestic battery not included in violent crime, assault with a deadly weapon, armed violence and reckless homicide, all of that not included in their data when they decided to tell who commits a crime after being let out on bond, which just seems kind of ridiculous to
me. Judge Evans, he said there was only 3 murders of people that were out on that type of bond, and the Tribune found a minimum. With the limited data that they were able to get from that judge's office, they found 21 murders. So he says 3, they find 21. domestic violence, if you're charged with domestic violence, in the charge and the bond sheet for that crime, there's a section called C that you have to surrender your any and all weapons that you own. Now, occasionally a policeman gets charged with domestic violence. You, where I worked, we have to go and the policeman have to surrender his weapons. So he therefore effectively can't work as a policeman. He has to go into court and get a change to that condition of his bond. Civilians, you know, they don't have a reason not to give that gun up. So if you say there's three and there's 21 with minimal data available, you can't say domestic violence is not a violent crime. You can't say reckless homicide is not a violent crime. The reckless homicide can be from a car accident. I can understand that. You know, you're, okay. But if you shoot
but
at somebody
need to look at that.
And miss, that shouldn't give you the right to go out free. If you shoot at somebody and hit them and you've had no previous thing, you shouldn't be able to go home and work on a monitor, because people have now discovered that you can take that monitor and hook it up in a car so you can be driving around with that monitor on.
And they decided that if those charges, the Tribune found that if those charges were included in the analysis, if they looked, dug in deeper and included those, the total would be at least four times higher than what was being reported by the chief judge's office. Stick around for a second. We're going to be right back with Sergeant Pete Kokonis. More to talk about with violence and the other issue we wanted to talk. Remind me, Pete, we had some other stuff to talk about.
The Civilian Review Board.
That's it. Thank you. More to come here on WGN. It's 144. We're back with Sergeant Pete. This is Anna DeVlantis. 146 here on WGN. Happy you're here with us. Talking about bond reform. And let's back up just a second, because initially, bond reform, and even when Kim Fox was running for office, I remember it's made a lot of sense to hear, look, we have a situation that's incarcerating poor people. It's incarcerating mentally
it's
ill.
It's unfair.
It's incarcerating minorities and people who are locked up in the Cook County Jail simply because they can't, for nonviolent crimes, simply because they cannot afford to bond out.
$500, $50, whatever it is.
And that piece of it, I think, spoke to a lot of us and said, that is wrong. That should not happen. What I think we're seeing and we're concerned about now is it moving to a level where it promotes lawlessness. And that's what I hear anecdotally from police officers like you. And that's what I saw in this Tribune analysis of the data, that it isn't quite as good as we thought it was in terms of people reoffending after they're let out on bond.
Yeah, to lessen your court cases that the state's attorney has to prosecute or has to appear for, it doesn't make sense to just let people out that you, if you use a gun in a crime, you should stay in jail, period. Okay?
That's not what you're saying.
If you don't have the money to make bond, you had money to buy that gun. If you don't have money to make bond, stay in jail. That's it. Because if you're out, you're going to there's a greater likelihood that you're going to reoffend.
And that's not what you're seeing. You're seeing people who use guns in the commission of crimes are bonding out.
Armed carjackers. A kid carjacked a woman with a gun on a Friday, and they, you know, went in there. They let him out. They gave him the eye bond. On Sunday, he got arrested for doing the exact same thing with a gun in another neighborhood.
I've heard that carjackings are a difficult thing to prosecute because if someone's caught driving a stolen car, that you then have to prove that they actually carjacked the car, because they can say, hey, this is my buddy's car. He told me it was his.
Right.
And that's not a crime, right? So you just happen to be in possession of a stolen vehicle. Difficult to prosecute.
The person has to identify the person that stole the car, and a lot of times they're thinking, wait a minute, why should I identify this guy? He knows where I live. He stole my car.
Unbelievable. We got to get to this last thing, too, because we don't have much time here with Sergeant Pete Kokonis. And you were also mentioning civilian review boards, a big issue. It's part of the consent decree, isn't it, that it might be coming here to CPD?
No. We've got enough things watching the police with the ACLU consent decrees, the IAD, the inspector general. Now somebody wants to start a civilian oversight. Where are they going to make They're going to elect these people and have them make the decision on who's going to be the superintendent, what rules and regulations we're going to implement, what strategies the police department's going to implement, and how that's going to work. And that woman that was just fired in Oakland was a candidate for Chicago.
Chicago superintendent.
Yeah, Kirkpatrick was her. M. Kirkpatrick. She went to Oakland, and by all appearances, according to everything I've read, she did a wonderful job. It just so happens that one of the commissioners got their car towed, went in there and wanted her to let the car out for free. She said, no, you got to pay.
So I can see where your personal issues would become
right. You cannot have a civilian group tell, you know, say, I'm going to hire Willie Gagatz and he's going to be the new superintendent. Man, he doesn't have the background. The mayor has to have input in who's going to be her police officer because he's the largest part of her budget.
Yeah.
She's also got to have the ability to retain him or fire him. So either if you in Oakland, they've had four police chiefs in 4 years. The next guy that goes there saying, listen, I want a contract because I'm not going to work here. You could fire me in 2 days.
Yeah, if you just have this review board that's going to take these kinds of steps for personal issues, that's not right. But here we're just about to name a new superintendent. They say March, early March potentially. So it's right around the corner. The superintendent will be chosen by the three candidates given to the mayor.
The mayor will get three candidates from the police board. She'll either say, I accept one of the three, or I reject them and go do another search.
All right. Sergeant Pete Kokonis, always like look forward to your visits. Thanks for talking about all that stuff. Thanks for breaking it down for us. Good to see you. We're going to, I want to read one text here first. Pat says, nonviolent. We had a guy who killed another guy. The killer was released with an ankle monitor and went out to kill in retaliation. So that's the kind of thing we've been talking about. That's what the spotlight is on in terms of how well is this bond reform working. It's an issue that's front and center in so many political races. And remember, Election Day is March 17th. So that's the primary. It's coming up right around the corner. All right. We do want to check in. There's something fun going on this weekend. It's the Polar Plunge. Don't know if you've ever done it before. Here's somebody who has never done it before, but is doing it this year for the first time. Mike Jansen, WGN meteorologist. You're taking the plunge this year, aren't you, Mike?
I am taking the plunge. I did it down in Southern Illinois. The last time I did it was maybe 15 years ago.
Oh.
And the water gets plenty cold down there. That was for Special Olympics Illinois. This is the big one, though. This obviously is the one into Lake Michigan. But the one down there, the 1 year the water temperature was 31.9 degrees. There was little pieces of ice floating around. So I know the chill. It's just been a while since I revisited that chill. So it's going to be an eye-opening experience on Sunday.
Long enough that you've forgotten enough of how painful it can be. But you know, here's the deal, Mike. It's like, this is what I think. I think normal civilians like us who don't study weather and do weather, you're like, well, how cold can it be? But you know how cold it is because these are things you keep track of, right? These are things that you look at this data all the time. And yet I know you're doing it for the right cause. They call it freezing for a reason. And it's about Special Olympics, right? You have to raise money for this very good cause.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, like, we think about early June or it's in May, and somebody falls into Lake Michigan, and how big of a scramble it is to go get somebody out of the water, even if it's just right there by the shore. If the water is, say, 50 degrees, because it quickly brings down your body temperature and the problems it can have. Here, you're talking about the water temperature, when I checked earlier, was 35 degrees. So it's plenty cold. It's plenty cold. And if you're standing outside, say, in shorts and T-shirt, and it's 35 degrees, yeah, there's a chill, but there's something about that water, you know, being in those wet clothes that really grabs you. And, yeah, you're right. Like you said, it's freezing for a reason. You wouldn't want to do it for any other reason. You see these other folks that get together. They're just called polar bear clubs, and they go out there in the lake because it's something they like to do every year. You know what? I like there to be a reason for me doing it, and the Special Olympics Chicago certainly is a good one.
It is a tremendous cause, and it was started right here in Chicago, of course, and it helps young athletes every year just do amazing things and achieve their goals. I think they're on track to $2 million raising for the Special Olympics this year. They're hoping.
That was the goal that I was told yesterday. It actually was on the midday WGN Midday News and was lucky enough to sit down with Matt O'Shea, and also Kid Carrig, who is a Special Olympian, and he has gotten together what he calls Kid's Crew. I think there are just over 60 people that actually will plunge with him. He's 11 years old, and together as a group so far, they'd raised a little bit over $50,000. So they were doing pretty good, just
That's
that group
amazing.
Alone.
That's amazing. And I think you have to, there's like a minimum you have to raise in order to participate.
Yeah, $200 is the minimum. So even if you wanted to show up on Sunday morning with $200 in hand and you think, okay, today's the day to go jump in the lake, let's do it. It does look like the weather's going to be nice for Sunday, like we're into the 50s. So not that it makes a huge difference when you jump into the water, but at least it won't be that cold while you're waiting your turn to go make that splash.
How long are you going to stay in? How long does somebody typically stay in? I don't know the answer.
The whole idea is you go out and you come back, and that's about it. You don't loiter out there too long because there's a whole lot of people that are waiting for it. They think, Matt was figuring they'd be somewhere close to maybe 4,000 plungers on Sunday.
Wow.
So they just go off in waves, and there will be all types of people that show up. It's quite amazing. Like I said, I'd never done one this big. So I'm looking forward to it. And they've got quite the setup down there. We're looking at the map with all the tents for all the different teams, places where you can go warm up afterwards and everything. And they're taking up a lot of real estate there at North Avenue Beach.
It's a wonderful cause. If people want to contribute to you or any of them, do you know where to go, Mike? Do you know where people can?
I personally have put my information on both my Twitter page, my Facebook page, and my Instagram page. All you can just look me up as Mike Jansen. That's with two S's. But you can find information there if you want to go to my page, if you want to make a donation, or if you just look up the Special Olympics Chicago, you'll be able to find, like if you did a Google search or something like that, you'd be able to find something there and a way to donate as well.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Can you give us a 30-second what's going on this weekend since we have you here and you're a bona fide meteorologist? Sorry to make you work extra.
Well, that's understandable, I guess. It looks like to me we're going to have plenty of sunshine on Saturday and temperatures making a run into the mid to upper 30s, and then we take this big jump. I mean, when I made my forecast this morning, it looked like we were headed probably toward the mid-50s on Sunday, which would put us a second Sunday in a row in the 50s. Now, don't anybody get any ideas thinking, oh, it's the 1st of March, start a meteorological spring. That doesn't mean it's the end of winter weather. It's just kind of those little teasers until we get to May when we actually start, you know, enjoying the warm-up that's here to stay for the most part.
Nice to get a break on the weekends, though, isn't it? It's awesome.
Well, it's great for those of you who have it off, but that's yes. When I'm at work. And I only cry a little bit. I only cry a little bit on those beautiful afternoons when I wander into the station. But you know what? I've got bills to pay and a daughter that will eventually go to college, so you have to go do what you have to do.
And you do a good job. Mike Jansen, thanks for checking in with us, and good luck out there this weekend with all those fine folks, thousands of people out there doing the Polar Plunge at North Avenue Beach. Thanks, Mike. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
I'd be a fearless leader. I'd be an alpha type. When everyone believes you, what's that like? I'm so sick of running as fast as I can.
And it's here on WGN. It's 208, and that's Taylor Swift. She has a new video out today. It's called The Man, where she lives life as herself, except that she's a man. So she's still a singer, and she does her whole thing, and we're going to talk about that. That's one of the subjects today here with our guests, two people I just love seeing all the time and can't see them enough. Heidi Stevens, she is a Tribune columnist. You know her and love her from there. And Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, and a parenting and relationship expert as well. They host a podcast too, we should say. So you guys have your podcast, which is awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Heidi Stevens, Dr. John Duffy podcast is what you say. So this video comes out and Taylor is dressed like a man. It's actually her. She uses prosthetics to kind of create this whole, she looks like a man. She's acting like a man and she's trying to prove a point. What did you guys take from it?
So I love the song. I haven't seen the video. I love the song and I love her point. And I think that I hope she gets people talking and gets their defenses down a tiny bit. I mean, I can imagine a bunch of listeners going like, oh, please. But I hope there's a few out there that go, well, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way. Now that you put it in a pop song, maybe I'll think about it a little bit.
That's the thing, because she's phenomenally successful. And you might say, hey, it's been easy for her, right? She started when she was young. She was a breakout star. She made the change from country to pop and top 40. And everyone's embraced her at every moment, but she's kind of talking about it really, it hasn't maybe been like you thought it was.
Well, I think that what celebrities can do, artists especially, whether they're singers or actors or, you know, writers, it's a way of not just talking about their own lived experiences, but hoping that their audiences can relate to what they're talking about too, right? So maybe she has had a pretty easy path, and certainly in comparison to a lot of people, she's had an incredibly easy path, but maybe she's able to tap into something that, you know, other listeners and fans can feel like, you know, hey, that is kind of backwards.
Right. It resonates with me.
That resonates with me, right.
Yeah, and I actually agree, and I did take time in between clients to watch the video, and I got at first I got a big kick out of it because I knew, having read the article, that it was her as the man, and she's kind of amazing, but also kind of it does put a really fine point on, you know, like, oh yeah, she as a woman, she would get an awful lot of flack for making this video. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
As a man, she can kind of even mock, like, I want to live like Leo DiCaprio on the yacht, right?
And she's like dressed like him. Fancy drinks.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And everybody says, hey, he's just biding his time until he finds the one, whereas the woman maybe isn't perceived in that same light.
Well, she gets a ton of crap. Can I say crap? She gets a ton of blowback for how many guys she dates, right? Where Leo's celebrated for how many women he dates. So right there, she's able to tap into that double standard a little bit. I think it also taps into a larger conversation we're having, right? When we look at the debate stage on Tuesday night with the presidential candidates and our candidates, you know, given a different set of expectations if they're female versus male. I think we can argue in some ways they are. And so it's a larger issue than what one pop star's life has been like.
Yeah, no, I definitely felt that. And it also felt like she was taking a big swipe at the music executives that we've heard so much about. I know she helped with, is it Kesha? She helped fund her, you know, she had a big legal battle about some sexual harassment issues and more than that. And so she took part in that, and she's been kind of a big sister or somebody who's helped out other people in the music industry and in those situations.
And in her own lawsuit too, right? The guy who was standing next to her and put his hand up her skirt. And
She won $1 or something, but
right,
she said she did it because she's trying to point out what we deal with and what happens in these circumstances.
I feel like she walks the walk.
Yeah, and she kind of is recouping control at one point over the music that has been kind of taken out of her own personal library. So it's a very powerful statement, almost shot by shot. And I thought the coolest thing was at the end, she's the one who actually made the video.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's hear at the very end, the final 15 seconds. I want to hear what you think about this, because she starts, she says something and she's trying to make a point here. Let's hear it and we'll respond to it.
Hey, just checking. Was that last take more what you had in mind?
Pretty good. Could you try to be sexier? Maybe more likable this time?
Okay. No problem.
By the way, excellent work over there, Lauren. That was astonishing.
Thanks.
So that's how she ends it. She's complimenting the female worker on the set, where she's telling the male star, you know, not quite sexy enough.
Yeah.
Not quite sexy enough. Sex it up a bit.
Be more likable.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, if you did not know it was her, if you didn't read the article first, you would have no idea.
Yeah,
it's
no
her
idea.
Starring as the man.
Yeah.
I mean, her acting abilities and the prosthetics they use, really, really convincing. All right, Dr. John Duffy is here. Heidi Stevens from Chicago Tribune is here. And we want to talk about TikTok. We've talked about it in the past. I think it's a subject that's not going away, because I feel like it's that social media site's the fastest growing, and it skews very young. And if you ask any 8 to 18-year-old, they'll probably know what TikTok is. You ask most parents of an 8 to 18-year-old, and they probably will have no clue what it is, including friends and parents in my own networks and stuff. It's kind of on my radar as of like 6 months ago. I didn't know about it. But, you know, my daughter was using it recently with an older cousin. And there's some issues that have come up about it, some challenges that are kind of exploiting teenagers on the site. It's one of those sites that makes it, I think, a little easier to exploit. But we're going to talk about that. Dr. John Duffy and Heidi Stevens coming up here on WGN. 2:14 is the time. Back with Heidi and John here. John, quickly, before I forget, you do have something going on that you would like to promote. You guys are always doing things outside of your normal jobs that are, talking about parenting issues, things like that. What do you got going?
Yeah, so this weekend I am speaking at the Zen Parenting Conference, which is being held out at the Westin in Lombard. I'm speaking tomorrow, and there's a whole bunch of great parenting speakers on Saturday. And if you go to zenparentingradio.com, I think you can pick up tickets there.
Awesome. Good to know. Let's move on to talk about TikTok. In the U.S., the National Center on Child and Sexual Exploitation has actually named them as part of the Dirty Dozen. So it's considered one of those social media sites where there are a lot of abuses, and they're not really policing very much. So enter this new challenge, young girls, some very young, who are, and it really skews young, as I said before. It's a site that a lot of people, you're supposed to be 13 in order to sign up, but it's so easy to get past that, easier on some sites than others. This one's easy. So you see even 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds, 10-year-olds getting on TikTok, and very easy to make videos. That's part of what it's about, and you put stickers on it, and it feels very young. This one is about girls undressing. And they're getting likes or hearts for doing that kind of thing. And it seems to be promoting this really, really bad stuff is going on because the kids are trying to do the best thing, get the most attention. And it's now, you know, it's gaining some sort of attention. I think it deserves a lot more. Maybe some of it could be harmless, but it looks like a lot of this is, to me, going too far.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Troubling to you guys?
Oh, yeah. For me, I would say absolutely. I hadn't heard of TikTok as of about 6 months ago. And now I don't know any kids who aren't at least paying attention to it. And there is this feeling that it is innocuous, but it feels really messy and really dangerous to me for some kids. And it's kind of this perfect storm for teenagers because these likes that are hearts can come from people you know, people you don't know. So if you are, you know, creepy in any way and looking to prey on children, TikTok is not a bad place to go, unfortunately. And so I worry about kids who are not very aware of who their audience is there.
They're trying to get TikTok to better moderate its content, and I don't think they've been that successful. There are some security settings that you can set, but it's difficult. It's not one of those sites that really you just have your followers follow you like you can do on Instagram. It's open to the world to see your videos, and you can block people, but basically your video is out there. You're 6, you're 7, you're dancing around the room. You put that out there and it's there. There you go.
It feels like a good opportunity to have a conversation with our kids about what they get out of this stuff. I mean, I think it's one of those conversations you should have around a whole bunch of different social media platforms, and it's probably a better idea than trying to just police or just go with the, you know, safety patrols or, you know, privacy settings, which are workaroundable. I think that the probably side-by-side approach should be to talk to your daughter and say, you know, what do you get out of likes and hearts? Like tell me what that makes you feel that you're searching for, or that, you know, what happens when you get a like? Like, what does that do for you? And translate that into other parts of their life too. Like, what, I think it's a good idea to train ourselves too, to ask, like, what am I actually getting out of this, right? Like, to train your kids to ask themselves, what am I getting out of this? And to train ourselves to ask, what am I getting out of this? And if it's just attention, like, talk about that. What does attention do for you, though, right? Because, I mean, you could get attention by setting fire to a building. Like, it's not that hard to get attention, right? Like, how is attention a win? Like, let's talk about that.
I think my concern goes to what happens next. So you put that video out there. It seems harmless. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it goes a little too far. You're undressing. But then the reaction to it is, I don't know, show me more or do something more. And then the kid might be ashamed to share that with a parent if they felt as if they pushed it too far.
Definitely. Right. No, so I think, you know, to Heidi's point, I think if you open up a dialogue around this stuff, instead of, like, you know, absolutely forbidding to talk about, like, so what do you use this for? You know, what do you think might be happening with the people who are liking it? You know, like, and kind of put them in the mindset of everybody involved. And kids are really thoughtful with their responses. And then you might come up with something they hadn't thought of about, like, you know, oh, yeah, maybe this isn't the best thing for me. Or I do this just to have fun with my friends. Or I feel lonely a lot of the time and the hearts make me feel good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so there could be a number of reasons for putting stuff out there. But I do think you're right, Heidi, that, you know, like, if you just say, you know, like, this is off limits because it's dangerous, I do not know the kid, whether he or she is 9 or 16, who does not know his or her way around the controls. That's right. Just the truth.
That's a good point.
I also think it can help to take kids off of screen platform and have them imagine, like, so do you think you'd walk into Subway tomorrow, sweetie, and do that? Or do you think, you know, like, let's go to Mariano's later, and would you
show the world?
Would you take your uniform off in front of those people? Because the truth is that the people who would be watching you at Mariano's could be watching you on the screen if it's open to the public. Help them get out of the what feels like the safety of a little device, right, inside their bedroom. Like, actually, the people watching you could be the same people walking around Mariano's right now, or walking around the mall right now, or walking around your school hallways right now. And so, like, think about how that would feel to have them see you undress. And that's essentially what you're making happen when you do these videos.
That's a great way to put it. I was just saying during the break to Dr. John that I saw my 8-year-old on TikTok with an older cousin, and I walked in and they both had that look on their face. The kids have when they're like, oh.
They get caught.
We got caught.
Yeah.
I was like, what's going on? And then I see that they're on TikTok, and they said they were just dancing. But it's great to put into perspective to them, hi, you're dancing for the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, would you even do that downstairs in front of the adults downstairs hanging out?
Right.
Or would you not? And it's just
right. If dad had his friends over, would you come downstairs and do that dance?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then let's talk about the fact that dad's friends or a bunch of strangers who are dad's friends' age could see you do it on their phones. Does that feel different to you? Why does that feel different? I mean, I just think those are good conversations.
They are great, great conversations.
And it doesn't have to be heavy necessarily. I think you can have
curious.
It in kind of a light way.
Yeah, like,
you
know, I'm just
like,
curious.
Like, you know, put yourself in Mariano's. Picture yourself undressing in Mariano's.
Right.
This is what this is effectively doing.
Yeah,
so.
The guy stocking the soup is watching you take your uniform off. Like, how does that feel? Does it feel gross?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I feel gross saying it. So
even
I
saying
hope
it, I got, yeah, I just got the heebie-jeebies thinking about
speaking
that.
Speaking for the room, yes.
Well, let me ask you, you deal with teenagers a lot, Dr. John, and you've written books about, you know, helping teenagers get through different things. But at certain ages, even preteen, you're kind of prone to wanting people to validate you, right? Wanting people to like you. I hear from my daughter all the time. She's like, I think I only have 2 friends in my class. I probably need more. I'm like, okay, I don't know that you need more. I think quality is more important than quantity. We had that conversation yesterday.
Right.
I hope that was the right conversation. I just was struck by she feels as if she needs more. In this case, though, you're looking at those hearts and likes as that validation. You're looking at it as like, gosh, you know, it feels good. There's some kind of how you get off of that.
Well, I think we can even relate ourselves. Like, I like it when if I'm sitting in the room and parents say, you know, like, you know what, if I post something and people don't like it, that ruins me. Like, that's really difficult for me. So I get that there's a draw to this kind of thing. If you kind of admit where, you know, your foibles in this regard, I think your kid is more likely to get on board and talk about their experiences. So, you know, like, there's open ways to talk about this stuff. What I encourage parents not to do, but it's so difficult, is to just lecture about, like, here's why this is a bad idea and why you're wrong for doing it, you know, and then kids feel kind of shamed. And then the idea is, I'm going to keep doing it, but I'm going to work around you. You know, and that's not particularly useful.
No. TikTok, by the way, has over 1.5 billion users since its global launch 3 years ago. So that puts it in perspective how many people are out there, right?
Oh, it's huge.
Right. And you just wonder what the demographic breakdown is. Because my feeling is it's like kids 8 to 18 and then 50 plus kind of creepazoids, but I don't know. I haven't looked into that. I don't know. But
that is the clinical term, by the way.
Is that what you use when you talk to people? Oh my gosh. The one thing, I just want to circle back and get to the stuff going on at the Tribune. Heidi, I know you're there and we've been covering it in the news. There's a seismic changes at the top there.
Yeah.
It's a news story. I love the Chicago Tribune. We all would like to continue with the quality and the quality people who are there.
Me too.
And we've been all covering that there are some changes there that are making that difficult.
Yeah. So we started our days today with an email from the CEO saying that we have a new editor-in-chief, and our current editor and publisher, Bruce Dold, is out as of the end of April. Our current managing editor, Peter Kendall, is out at the end of this week, and Colin McMahon, who's been at the Tribune a long time, is going to take over as editor-in-chief. He's not splitting the role as editor/publisher, which is how Bruce has been doing the job. So it's a little bit of a shift in how that job is going to be, I guess, conceived and executed. So, yeah, huge changes.
What does it mean, do you think?
Well, I don't know. It feels too early to say. It feels sad because Bruce has been there 42 years. Peter's been there 32 years. They're great guys. It's been, they've led the newsroom through a ton of change and toward Pulitzers and lots of good, you know, policy change and made, you know, affected, you know, all sorts of good stuff in the community, I would say. So it feels sad to watch them leave. Colin, I've worked with and for a number of years, and he has a good head for news and hopefully, you know, leads us into good places. I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going to happen next. We had a big meeting as a staff today at 11 to talk about all the changes, and people feel, I think, a little shell-shocked right now. But, you know, he kind of takes over, Colin kind of takes over the newsroom Monday, so we'll see.
All right. All right. It's Heidi Stevens from Chicago Tribune, Dr. John Duffy. He's going to be at an event this weekend in Lombard. ZenParentingRadio.com is where you go if you'd like to sign up for that. Thank you both. Good to see you.
You too.
2:29 here on WGN, and the news coming up next at the bottom of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Anna DeVellantis here on WGN. Okay, so we've been following the coronavirus and the COVID-19, as the scientific community refers to it. And we learned today, I think I heard at the top of the hour in the news, that the first pet has it, which is interesting to know about. And I thought, well, who can we talk to about that? Steve Dale, of course. We're going to be talking with pet expert Steve Dale. The other thing that was interesting, too, that's it's come up is pet masks. I don't know if you've seen on social media the mask thing. We've heard about the number of people who are buying masks and that the searches for masks on Google has gone up dramatically. And that some stores are out of masks or low supply on masks. But that even for the pets, apparently the pets are wearing the masks and people are posting pictures of that online. So who do we talk to about all of that? Well, of course, our favorite pet expert, Steve Dale. How are you, Steve?
I hope you're only pet expert.
Well, yeah, you're the only and the favorite, and we're happy you're here. Because,
well, thank you.
You know these things. And you were just at some conference or convention recently?
Yes, I was at the Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas, where the hot topic was actually something I think we'll also talk about, and that's CBD and pets.
CBD and pets, another thing. Lots of sales in the CBD for the pets. So I want to find out if you think that's a good idea, if they work or not. But let's talk about that, because did you hear the coronavirus has now impacted a dog? No, you're not. It's not true?
I don't understand that. So not the coronavirus. So let me back up 20 steps here.
Perfect.
So the coronavirus that we're talking about is not new. It's impacted humans and our pets for eons. It's called, do you like beer?
I do.
I thought so.
Steve, what does that mean? What does that mean? Because I was part of the Rokan show and there was regular drinking on the program.
Well,
I don't know how he's gotten away with that, but he has. But you're right.
That.
Go ahead.
There's that. Mm-hmm. So the Corona beer, the logo of the Corona, is kind of like what the coronavirus looks like.
Actually, yes, remember some bars thought they were being cute by offering Corona specials as long as the coronavirus lasts. I mean, it was really, right, so the obvious sort of reference to that came out.
Okay.
Got
so,
it. Beer.
And dogs
back
do,
to beer.
Okay. Well, dogs get the coronavirus, and they've gotten this coronavirus for generations. And it can cause intestinal upset or sometimes no signs at all. And generally, it's not very serious. In cats, it's even a bit more complicated. So in cats, it's actually called the benign enteric coronavirus. Most cats show no symptoms. And if you say my kitten's a little has a upset tummy, by the time the veterinarian calls you back, the kitten is usually fine. The problem is in some cats, a small percent, but significantly, the coronavirus does a mutation into immune-mediated disease called feline infectious peritonitis. And that actually is relevant, even though it sounds real technical, and you'll hear why it's relevant that no other show has heard in a moment, actually.
In a moment. So, why do we have to wait a moment?
Because I want, I want to tell the story.
Okay,
It can get a bit rather complicated here. So there is no, so far, no demonstrable evidence that people have ever gotten coronaviruses from their pets or are coronaviruses, which in general cause the common cold, and symptoms that we call the common cold, have ever been transferred to pets. What happened here in China, apparently, is that the coronavirus mutated from a pangolin, an animal most people have never heard of.
I've never heard of a pangolin. I thought it was a bat. So a pangolin, is that in the bat family?
No, it's in the anteater family, and not even. It has its own genus, I believe, but it kind of looks like and appears like an anteater, and the scales on this animal are apparently made for soup for medicinal purposes in China. So they had this animal illegally at the market. It isn't unusual, necessarily, for viruses to jump species. So the H3N8 dog flu virus that I've talked to you about
on
the air.
You've talked about it before. You said it can be very, very troubling for a pet, and that's why you recommend the flu vaccine for our dogs.
Yeah. So
get it.
That's one of the two strains of dog flu. That strain of dog flu actually began as an equine virus, and it jumped from horses, we know exactly where, in Florida, and at a greyhound racing track, where there were also racehorses, and jumped from horses into dogs. As far as we know, we cannot, back to the Wuhan coronavirus, the one that's making people sick, you know, all over the world and now in America, I guess, that virus, as far as we know, cannot be transferred to dogs or cats. And cats, if it were transferred, which we don't believe it can be, wouldn't be transferred back to us.
Okay. That's important to clear up. That's very, that totally makes sense. So you don't worry about going dog to human. Would you put a mask on your dog?
No. I don't know. The experts, so I'm not a physician, but experts who are say putting a mask on us. In most cases, the masks that are most popular on the market
filter not as much of the stuff you need. And I think it's N95 you need, that's 95% of the particles. It's the large droplets that most of them will keep from you. But I don't know. It could help, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It's not 100% foolproof.
No, I guess washing hands is better. However, now the part that nobody knows except now you and everyone who's listening.
All right.
That the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health have contacted some veterinarians who are working anyway on this thing that I call feline infectious peritonitis, the immune-mediated disease caused by coronaviruses in cats. And they are, veterinarians have figured out a way to deal with this in cats. That's new. What's really new, like within hours, is that these organizations, the U.S. government, is contacting veterinarians saying, okay, you have figured this out for cats. I wonder if this could help people too. And that is new.
Interesting.
Yes.
So you can imagine why health officials are all talking to each other. Just kind of fascinating to see that they're also talking to the veterinarian community. And there's that sort of communication going on.
And it's not surprising to me. I mean, after all, this virus came from an animal anyway, in the first place, an animal that we know very, very little about on top of everything else, somehow mutated, as viruses do, impacted people because people have no immunity to this. We have no experience with this virus.
Right. It's a new strain of coronaviruses, which have been around for a while, but this is different.
Very different. So we have no immunity built up to it. I wonder if, say, the researchers, if what we're doing in cats can somehow help. And I don't know what the answer is, but I know the veterinarians that have been contacted and they're working on it.
That is fascinating stuff, Steve. It's why we just love hearing you're always on the pulse of what's going on. And that's a great thing to know about because that provides the hope. We're hoping that there'll be a vaccine. I think we heard an 18-month timeline, potentially moving it up sooner, which would be great because I think it would be necessary to get something like that to people.
Well, treatment virology is rather challenging. So if this were a bacterial infection, again, I'm not a medical doctor, but if this were a bacterial infection, I think we'd be better off. You know, we could create antibiotics. Antivirals are a bit more challenging.
All right. Let's get to the CBDs here. People are buying them for their pets.
Yes!
There's a growing area. I mean, I see them when I go on the pet sites, no matter where you are. You've got the CBDs available for all kinds of things, arthritis or pain, whatever it is, health overall. Are you a believer, Steve Dale, pet expert, in the CBDs?
In a word, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I really am, you know, because, and I'm talking about for pets now, not necessarily for people, although I assume I'd have the same answer for people. You know, they're and that's because they're wired the same way we are. Mm-hmm. You know, dogs and cats are. So their endocannabinoid system is very similar, if not identical, to our own. So it doesn't surprise me. But there are concerns that I have. So here you go, and you go into the store, and you get some for yourself. And you put it up on the counter.
Okay.
And maybe you're not getting CBD. Maybe you're getting an edible, THC, you know, marijuana edible. Mm-hmm. And you're putting it up on your counter. The edibles are often chocolate. So it's chocolate brownies with infused with THC or marijuana. Okay, you're supposed
chocolate
to take...
Chocolate not good for pets, mm-hmm. as we know.
Right, so you're supposed to take one of those. The dachshund that weighs 28 pounds, or for some dachshunds a bit more than that, but that's another story.
That can be hard for a dachshund, too, because yes. their bellies get big enough. Their legs are not big enough to support it.
I know.
It's a problem.
So that dachshund somehow gets... I used a bad example because a dachshund's not going to jump up on a counter. But let's say it falls to the floor, or a Labrador retriever who weighs even more still doesn't weigh anywhere near what a person weighs. So now you've got a double whammy. You've got a dog ingesting tons of this stuff, the whole package. A person would only have one brownie a day, maybe. But the dog is eating 12 or 14 or whatever, and it's chocolate. Which is toxic to dogs.
Yes.
So dogs are getting very, very sick from this stuff when they get into it when they shouldn't. What we don't know, getting back to your original question,
mm-hmm.
is exactly what CBD does for pets. We think we know for some kinds of seizures, there may be appropriate application. And we know anecdotally, so we don't know, but we think anecdotally anyway, that there are other reasons that the stuff actually, for a long list of things, anxiety and arthritis and other things, actually does some good.
And you can tell as a pet owner, can't you, if your pet is seeing relief? If you feel
sure.
like your pet has terrible arthritis and you know that they don't move around that well or they walk as if they're in pain?
Yes.
You can tell.
Yes. Oh, sure. But... Okay, so I'm giving CBD to my pet. I spend $28 doing it. Maybe my pet's going to get better because I spend $28 doing it, you know? So we want real science to
That's
actually
true.
Observe. But yes, anecdotally, it really, there are advantages, but be careful.
Yeah, be careful. It's not a regulated area.
Well,
as
that's
of right
the
now.
Thing, too. So that CBD product over there, is it the same as the CBD product down
Who knows?
The street? Well, right. So there's a couple of companies. Again, I'm talking about the veterinary realm now. A couple of companies that are doing serious research.
Hmm.
And those are the companies I'm paying more attention to.
Good to know. Steve Dale. SteveDale.tv, you know I'm Steve Dale's Pet World, and here on WGN Radio, and we love to hear from you, Steve, and thank you for clearing that up on the coronavirus in particular, because I did not know that, and it's making news today, and you presented that in a perfectly understandable way, so thank you.
Thank you. I tried.
You did.
It's complicated.
It is. Well done, my friend. 244 here on WGN. We have more coming up here on the show, and then the news coming up at the top of the hour on the from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, 246, we'll talk about e-scooters here. E-scooters, they are coming back to the streets of Chicago.
Oh, boy.
You know the things that people either love or they hate? If you use them, you're in the camp of liking them. Other than that, everyone else does not like the e-scooter. That's what I've found, because they are giving them another shot. They had a pilot program last year, the city of Chicago did. Now they say, hey, you know what? We've made some tweaks, and they're coming back. Here they come. But now, so some aldermen are saying that they want to have docking stations, because one of the biggest complaints
yeah.
was people just dumping them.
I thought they did have to have them put
no.
them
no.
somewhere.
No, you can leave them wherever
the
in
scooters?
The zone.
Oh, but,
yeah.
they, but the companies had to pick them up every night. I think that was
Yeah,
it.
Something like that. But you do have to put it like on the sidewalk. You
right.
know, there are certain areas, but there's no
in
specific
the
area. But that was kind of the fun of if you do ride it, because it's like, oh, I don't have to go to a specific spot to
right.
drop it off.
Just
I'm dump leave it here. Yeah.
Dump it in the middle of the street. Or the wherever,
that's how they
you
ended
want.
Up in trees in the lake, you know.
So. Remember that? They were everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
See, I think, and again, I don't want to keep saying I was just in L.A., but I was just in L.A.
Oh.
where there were
no
a couple
deal.
On the corners, you know, where, and I think it's one of those things where it's because they're new to us that we're seeing them and we're outraged by them. But
well, and people choose to be jerks with them.
But I think once we get used to them, we'll just stop seeing it as trash.
Here's my problem with it. I have no problem with the bikes. I think that sometimes it could be very hard as a driver to navigate all the bikes. I live near the hipster highway there in Milwaukee that goes past the Blommer Chocolate Factory. And there's, it is, if you're rush hour, it is like Shanghai. I mean, there are so many bikes. I've gotten used to that, but I find the problem with the e-scooters is that these are people who don't ride e-scooters all the time. You can pick one up, you can have your friend ride on the back, no one says anything, you can do whatever you want, and you're not identifiable. And it's like, okay, so somebody who doesn't really know the rules doesn't know that you're not supposed to be on the sidewalks, which is true. Yeah. You're not supposed to be on the sidewalks. Alderman Riley has been making it clear that that's something he'd like to see. Certainly in this geolocator, high-tech world, why can't you do something? If you can create a barrier that says they can't go east of Halsted, why can't you create something that stops them when they go on sidewalks?
Then make them like slot cars. Remember the slot cars? You only go down the side of the street.
That would be fine.
Yeah, it's scary as a driver. I totally get that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's scary. I just drive a few miles downtown every day. But
do you see them? If you were downtown, you wouldn't see them. No.
But the bikes, you just never know because the bikes don't follow the rules and they expect you to, and you're the responsible one.
And that's the other problem I have with the bikes, too, is that they also are not identifiable. Why can't we have even a $5 license plate or something?
Yeah.
Just so if somebody does, because we've talked about e-scooters last year on the air, and you had people call in and say, I was hit by somebody in an e-scooter, or they did this or that, and there was no way to find out.
Right.
Now, I know, again, you can sort of go, if you go through some multiple channels, you can find out which scooters were in the area at approximately what time. It's a lot of work to try to do that.
It'd be hard. And
very
hard. How much, police already have to deal with here, they're probably not even going to get
good
to
luck.
It.
Yeah. Good luck. I mean, even paying an attorney to do it. I just don't know how there's a responsibility factor there that I feel like you need to sort of figure that piece of it out too. Now, with the new e-scooter program, they're going to be whittling down the number of scooter companies. So I think one or two of them are not around anymore. But then others, they decided that were bad offenders of certain things, like the ones that their scooters were found going faster than they were supposed to go, or outside the boundaries of where they were supposed to go, that those have not been invited back.
Well, at least that's good.
Yeah, that piece seems fair. But I think the whole social equity piece of it didn't turn out to be true, because initially it was like, this is a very reasonable way to go the distance if you don't live or you can't afford to live right near a public transportation line.
They talk about the last mile.
Right.
This like the Divvy bikes for commuters are the last mile from Union Station to over here or whatever, and that's what the scooters were supposed to. But no, they're just fun.
They're just fun. That's right. It. They said the first mile, last mile. They're supposed to get you to the transportation because you're not going to want to walk a mile or take a cab because that's too expensive. So you would take a scooter. First mile, last mile. But what they found was, when they looked at the data, was that a bulk of the scooter trips were taken by well-to-do white men, according to the city report on the program.
Probably after a few drinks, too, because they're very enticing.
There's a little drunky scootering. Yep. I've noticed it in the West Loop. I have documented this.
Which is a problem, because
it
if
is.
You're out in
scary,
the street,
yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The neighborhood where you saw the most scooters was the West Loop, a big dining area and, entertainment area.
That's where I always saw them.
Young area with a lot of millennials. And you can see they're popular. They're popular, but it's a little bit chaotic on some nights, especially at certain times when the bars are letting out. And you say, I'll take a scooter home. I'm fine. I can't drive, but I can take a scooter.
Right.
No, you can't. You definitely can't. All right. Speaking of millennials, millennial men, according to a new study, embrace gender equality more than previous generations, but not vacuuming. They don't like vacuuming. A new survey from Gallup found that among opposite sex couples, 18 to 34, millennials and the oldest members of Gen Z were no more likely than older couples to divide household chores equitably, but that they did not want to do, when they divided up everything, they did not like to do the vacuuming.
Well, no one vacuums anymore, right? It's the Roomba.
Yeah, that's true.
Lucky enough to have one.
I feel like vacuuming is one of the better chores. I hate doing the dishes.
Oh, I don't like vacuuming. I don't like dishes either.
Or putting my clothes away. Doing laundry, fine. Putting the clothes away, no.
Yeah. Do you have a Roomba, Steve?
I do not, no.
Mm-mm. They've got so many of them on the market now. There's just different ones.
Did I say I was just in L.A.?
Oh,
yes, you did.
My daughter has one.
Does she have a big space?
No, three girls sharing an apartment. It's like three broke girls, and they've got a room. I don't know quite what the story is.
I get it for people with pets. My sister and brother-in-law have one because they have a dog that sheds all over the place and a lot of wood floors, so totally makes sense. Otherwise, I mean, you're really getting that much dirt.
Right. But I think in a college, for three college people,
well, they're,
kids,
they're young professionals.
Oh, they're young professionals now. Okay. Yeah. So they're young and they're probably busy and they don't want to deal with that kind of thing.
They must have gotten, it had to be a deal somewhere. I don't know. Because I don't think
or a gift.
I don't think they're making the cash that's going to bring in a Roomba.
I was going to say, somebody got a nice Christmas present or something like that. We've got 309, licensed bikes, seriously? Just give them tickets if they break the law. I don't, if you're a driver and they cut you off or they do something or they run into a pedestrian, I don't know how where there is the recourse on that. So, and then we have, Anna, you're right, they should pay a license fee and have plates to generate revenue and cover all the costs of the bike paths.
There you go.
Well, that's not ever going to happen, but it's not an outrageous proposal. I mean, if we are building this infrastructure for bicyclists. Now, the idea is that more bikes on the road are better for the environment, so we should encourage it.
Well, and it's a better option for people that don't have the money to have a car or pay for, you know, taxis or Ubers if they don't want to take the CTA or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At least I would think that would also be kind of the thought process.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I like the idea. I know there are those who will probably not be on board with that. Here's finally here. Bachelor is now casting seniors for a new dating reality
show. Why are you looking at me like that?
Have you been to L.A. lately? You see any other seniors there?
Right.
Yeah, so they say now's your chance to appear on national television if you want to be part of the Bachelor senior version. ABC casting a new version. Seniors looking for love. Boy, I bet this will be
different.
That
might be the only one I would ever watch, ever.
Do they have an age there?
65 and over.
65 and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, casting calls been put out for people ages 65 and over.
So it'll air at 5:30.
Really?
Is there equally
right
as much
Jeopardy.
Stage drama?
I think, you know, I just, you know how then so much of that is staged,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's all
pointing
scripted.
Out, it's all scripted. I just wonder how this will take a different turn.
And
you know?
When I say it will air at 5:30, that's so I can watch it.
Yeah, well, Rosie stole my dentures, and she's not being honest about it.
Here we are, ABC reality show head Rob Mills described. Producer is looking for Bachelor Nation, that's the hashtag. Give us your grumpiest old men, give us your goldenest girls.
See? They're already trying to get a personality type.
I think that could be a great show. A great draw for
We're
people.
We're ready for this, I think. Because I don't watch The Bachelor.
A little sweetness, maybe.
Yes.
Instead of all that.
Actually, yeah, probably find some real love.
Right.
Maybe.
Who knows?
All right, I'm hopeful for that. We ended on a hopeful note. We're going to check in on the news and see what's coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour here on WGN.